Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reginald Clemens. The name of this show is Reginald Clemens Speaks on Reentry 2030. It is on the Shedding Light Network, where it can be found on Blog Talk Radio. So you go to Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light Network with Leona Brandio, and the name of this show in this episode is Reginald Clemens Speaks on Reentry 2030. Now, what Reentry 2030 is, for those that do not know or haven't listened to previous shows, is it's a program that's more of a at the front door for individuals who have 2 years or less. And what we try to do is try to evaluate each individual on an individual basis and tailor a release program for them for their individual success. There are a lot of objective goals that we have that we're working towards in order to make it as much of a seamless process for success over the next 5 years as possible. But we hit some stumbling blocks. Well, saying nothing worthwhile is without struggle. Now, if you would like to call in to the show, you can call in and give your comments and opinions and ask whatever questions you would like to ask so that we can address it. Now, we welcome any questions that you have because our ideas, our criticisms and critiques, because that's how we refine things and get better. The phone number to call is 657-383-1630. That's 657-383-1630. I need to, and to do this radio show and to call, and these phone calls cost 10 cents a minute. So if you would like to help relieve some of the economic and financial pressures that we suffer and we engage and we wrestle with, you can donate at RC Redemption. That's hashtag RC Redemption. But we want you to call in more than anything, because we need your ideas, your opinions, and we look forward to anything that you want to talk about, and so that we can engage and get a deeper understanding of what reentry looks like to you. Now, Reentry 2030 is supported by the governor of Missouri, Mike Parson, as well as the director of the Missouri Department of Corrections and Precinct. Now, what we do here is we have a team of 20 facilitators and mentors who teach different classes. But we engage the clients and individuals who are going to be released. We engage them on a 24-hour basis. We engage them. We have classes throughout the week, and we counsel them and talk to them and observe them and study their progress as we try to groom them into family-oriented individuals who can get out and maintain a stable job and be responsible and productive members of the community. And that's a lot to do. And a lot of people play a lot of different parts and roles. Now, I've been having different facilitators and instructors on here. And this week, I would like to welcome Larry Kane. Larry Kane is someone who studies a lot dealing with communications, and he's been very effective in helping with some of our clients who have mental illnesses and chemical imbalances who need more attention and more focus. And when communicating with people who have mental illnesses or who have chemical imbalances, it is very important to have exacting communication skills and be extremely observant. It takes a lot of patience and consistency. But I'll let Larry Kane go into what it is that he does and what he thinks of the program and what he hopes that we can accomplish from his perspective, because we all bring a different perspective and viewpoint. Here's without further ado, here's Larry Kane.
Hello?
2030. What we're here to do and what we aim to do is to make a difference. The goal is to make a difference, to use the criteria, the curriculum, to better lives, to change lives, better lives, and to...
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Be more effective with making a difference in society as individuals who go through this curriculum utilize the tools that are provided to help themselves. That way the chances of recidivism are kind of lessened due to the interaction, the mental framework and reframeworking of beliefs and other sort of habits that have been formed in the individual's lives. Here, in the reentry, as far as myself, my placement is mostly trying to work with those who are mentally challenged, mentally ill, for better word. And what I do is work with these individuals on their level and their world. But before we go any farther, I would like to share of myself. My name is Larry Kane, and I'm at this moment 44 years of age, and at this moment I've been in prison. I've gone on 23 years. And throughout these 23 years, I've been able to recognize and realize that the persons that are incarcerated are different. Our challenges are different. One individual challenge may be of one level or one caliber, and another individual challenge may be of one level and another caliber. However, what I realize is that most or some of the staff members inside of the prison or the institutions are not really trained to deal with these persons or service these persons their needs. No fault on them not being able to set aside the time that it takes to work with these individuals. The training requires them to be a certain, way with all persons. So when we're dealing with the mentally challenged people who need that one-on-one relationship, that bonding, that skill set, that helps them to get through their incarceration, I've come to realize is very important. I realized that to be very important when I began to work through mental health and was able to become up close and personal with those persons who are debilitating inside of the prison with extensive sentences due to mental illness or mental health. Here in another institution, I worked with a particular individual who mental issue was he was debilitating from the frontal lobe deterioration of his brain. This person, his name was Dwayne Simmons, and he had was taken and isolated from the regular population due to his situation. And as I was working with him over the years, it became very intimate in a sense to where I was able to glean an insight into the reality of mental illness. And it was touching for me. And it was sort of like on the job training as I worked with this individual who was at the time 53 years of age, fairly young for a man, but was debilitating because of his frontal lobe deterioration. And that became an experience for me that kind of opened my eyes to see persons in their differences, be more understanding that not every person is the same. And so heartfelt to watch a person debilitate inside of a prison that was not really trained to deal with his sort of situation. And due to the extensive sentence and the crime that he had and was incarcerated for, he was kind of all along under the care of the nursing staff. No fault of them, but it was just a situation that they didn't have the time to be with quality care for him because of their workload and other offenders that they had to tend to. So I was given an opportunity to work with him for 3, 4, 5 years before I was transferred to another institution. And I carried that in legacy of him. I mean, to work with those whom I'm able to recognize or have mental challenges. I mean, to step outside of my world and enter into their world in hopes that their life and the quality of life that they have under the circumstances will be improved. And what I've come to realize is that it takes a lot of selflessness because it's not always about the caretaker or the caregiver of the individual. It is about meeting the needs of those who are in need of that care and that quality care throughout the stay inside of the prison. So after reentry 2030, I try to bring that attitude, that realization, that whole aspect of life, not only to those who are mentally challenged, but to those who have to interact with those who are mentally challenged. Because I realize that this world becomes an opportunity for them to become versed in that reality so that when they return into society, they're able to deal and be more understanding with compassion with persons that they encounter who are suffering from mental illness as well. That's pretty much the attitude that I bring into this environment. It's helping persons to see that most people with mental illness in this situation gives them an opportunity to become more, not so much familiar, but more sensitive with the persons who are going through things in their lives and are misunderstood and a lot of times rejected because of something they're going through that is not always in their control. And I think that is a beautiful thing to do for us.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Open-minded to the diversity inside of the institution and the diversity that awaits those who are entering into society so that they can be able to make a difference as a reference, direct reference from their experience with those whom they have encountered throughout their incarceration or dealing with mental health issues and things of that nature.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Okay, in the United States, the penal system, the mass incarceration, 2.3 million people incarcerated, we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. And when you speak of these psychological issues these incarcerated individuals are going through, I was wondering, I know that a lot of prisoners get diagnosed with antisocial behavior. And I think a lot of them suffer from PTSD because a lot of them have been traumatized as children or adolescents. A lot of them have had things happen to them in their lives. So do you come across a lot of individuals that are incarcerated that suffer from these illnesses? And if so, how do you address these issues? Because we have a society out here that looks at all incarcerated individuals in a stereotypical way. And I try to let them know that every case is different. But again, we know, and they talk about it themselves, that we have an epidemic in this country with mental illnesses. And rather than put them in long-term residential treatment facilities, they throw them in the prisons. So can you talk a little bit more on that?
Yes. I'm glad you pointed out the aspect of trauma. Before the entry into incarceration, or as you say, post or after. because the trauma is very real and the antisocial behavior is very real. It's because some of us utilize that as a defense mechanism. Not, and as we continue this process, it becomes more of a habit and a conditioning, which within itself is diametrically opposed to rehabilitation, because we know that being able to socialize with persons is very important in the rehabilitation process. However, that takes trust. And when we sometimes experience things or see things inside of an institution, be it predatory behavioral violence, things of that nature, that becomes trauma for us, a psychological trauma, to where we begin to feel safeguards within ourselves. And that's an aspect of it, a reality of it. However, so farther into answering your question, it is very real, the aspect of the trauma and the mental health aspect of it, and these realities within an individual, and that is directly and indirectly stifling our growth, that is stifling the opportunities that come to us that will help us to rise above it. And with mental health, the aspect of it, I think rehabilitation is really all about mental health, because that's what the issue is in the mind. And when we're not addressing these issues, then what we do is give them an opportunity to become deeply and more deeply rooted. And with doing it themselves, it's like the individual starts to turn in on himself. And what others really experience, directly and indirectly, is the fall, the internal fall of the individual. So I think it's very important that society, and not only society, but the institutions or the independent institutions really start to focus more on the mental health aspect of all persons that are incarcerated, because often we suffer in silence. See that the reason behind it, I believe, is a lack of trust, and sometimes rightfully so, dealing with individuals that we have to kind of live amongst. You know, not everyone is in the best interest of another person. Not everyone is really looking to better themselves or to do things that would be in best interest of them and other persons. So I agree with you 100% that the mental health aspect is very, 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 very important, and we should start to focus on that aspect of the individual, because if we can grasp the problem,
you have 1 minute left,
where it starts, I believe that our chances increases to make a difference and to set a person, a motivated person, to take a better path. Do you have anything else that you would like to ask?
Yes, I do. But you're getting ready to, shut down now, but you'll be calling back in?
Yes, 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 I will.
Okay, because I had one other question, and I wanted to ask about that further. But
yes, okay.
Looking
yes,
forward to
you.
Thank you so much. Audience,
yes,
they will be back, audience, and they will be talking more on these issues. So I hope everyone will listen closely as they speak on these things. So they are going to be calling back in.
Okay, right.
Thank you so much. Audience, these are some of the issues that we're dealing with in the United States prisons, and a lot of people are suffering from mental health issues. There are so many issues that go on. And society, people a lot of times don't look at these things. They look at the crime, they look at the victim, they don't look at the causes behind crime. And if you notice, under mental health issues, they don't need to be in prisons. They need to be in long-term residential treatment facilities. They've closed down all the mental institutions throughout the United States. For what reason? Prisons for profit. And this is a major problem in this country. People are not getting the treatment they need, the appropriate mental health treatment. They're getting kept in solitary confinement, restrictive blocks. They're getting abused, violated. They're getting deprived, provoked, harassed. But they are not, by any chance at all, they are not getting the treatment that they should be getting. So as we listen to these men talk about the things that go on in the prisons, These are people that actually know what's going on because they are experiencing it themselves. So we are going to be bringing them back on the show, and everyone listen closely, because these are men who are experienced, knowledgeable of these issues, and they can help all of us to know what to do to advocate for the incarcerated men, women, and youth in this country. So we have Reginald Clemens back again, and also, I'm sorry, what was his name or your name again?
Larry Kane.
Larry
Kane,
C-A-I-N. Kane, I want to thank you and Reginald once again and your team for coming on the show to talk about these issues. What I wanted to ask is, I know when they have these type of psychological issues, they are allowed to maintain or have single cell status. Does that happen in your prison system? And also, if it does, can you tell if the antisocial behavior falls into that category as well? And I understand, too, there's a lot being done with releases throughout the country, because the Department of Justice has recently admitted that we have a major problem in this country with mass incarceration. And there are thousands of people being released daily in the penal system. So there should be a lot of empty cells. I want to know your thoughts on cramping people in cells together, especially when they have some psychological issues.
Great question. Very, very great question. Often there are those who suffer from mental health issues. They try to put them together or isolate, but there are times when they're a match with persons whose mental reality is not as theirs. And that is another challenge for persons. Just take for instance, if you have someone autism and you have a person who don't understand that reality or that whole psychological aspect of a person and trying to relate or making attempts to relate to a person, that within itself can be create disturbance. And naturally so, because ignorance becomes the light in that situation. A person who has not been trained to relate to a person, or live with a person that is going through such a mental reality that they do not understand, creates a situation that can go from bad to worse, or misunderstanding to worse, because a person could do something and a person could take it in a light that is not intended to be taken. It is a consequence of a person being, as you said, psychologically mentally impaired, for a better word. So it is very real. A person is getting housed or living with someone who they do not understand. And that is challenging not only for he who don't understand, but the person or the mental health patient who is kind of forced into a world that is outside of their world. And with most persons not being with the genuine care, concern, and compassion to walk a step outside of themselves and to understand or take the measures that it takes to educate themselves on who and what they're dealing with, builds walls that are not therapeutic for neither individual. And the mass incarceration thing is that, because some people have really mental health debilitations result of their extensive incarceration. And the trauma that comes with that. So that within itself is also part of this world or reality that we experience while we're in these prisons in the nature. So and another challenge we have is that often we don't have the background of individuals who are going through these things. I mean, like, it's not always, we're not always privy to this is what this person is suffering from, what their mental health diagnosis are, or the medications that they've taken, the behaviors that come with taking these medications, things of that nature. So sometimes the burden, if you can become a burden to other persons directly with staff, you know what I mean, when they're asked for certain standards to be met, and that's challenging for a person to say, okay, to interact.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Who's not in a sound mind. So that aspect should be addressed too. And like in certain places, mental health institutions have been shut down. So they're forcing more people who are really with mental health issues to be incarcerated. And some extensive, some are not so extensive. Some are being sent back right into society and they have not had the treatment that they really need. So that within itself creates a problem inside of a problem. Because a lot of times their caseload is so heavy and overloaded, they don't have they're not able to spend the quality time and service the therapy that these individuals need. And a lot of persons don't understand because even those who understand have their own issues and maybe they're not getting the therapy or the quality interaction that they need to make a difference in their lives. So it becomes one of those situations to where, okay, now you have double trouble, you know what I mean, on top of double trouble because it becomes a house that's collapsing within itself. And I think that from the mental health aspect, that they should be given a lot more support to where they're able to do a better job and invest the quality time that they have been trained to service these individuals, which will make a big difference not only in the person who suffers mental illness, but also those who have to interact with those who suffer mental illness, because it becomes a situation where now they're enlightened and able to take and deal with these persons from a different reference, which is the reference of education, the reference of enlightenment, a reference of, okay, compassion and understanding, a reference of, okay, this is how I approach this situation, this is how I do not approach this situation. Okay, and it comes out to even persons who are being managed through medication, you know, okay, to make sure that they're taking their medication and to that we may be better instruments and instrumental in playing a more significant part in their life as they're going through these, say, trials and tribulations of being able to go through and live although they're suffering from mental illnesses and things like that. Does that make sense, or did that answer your question?
It makes very much sense. And, you know, I always say that the best counselors are those who have been through it, the best substance abuse counselors, the best mental health counselors. And I want to ask you your thoughts on what your thoughts are on getting the Department of Mental Health involved in doing independent evaluations in the prisons. The reason I ask this is because there was a prisoner one time, and this goes to show you speak about these counselors and these psychologists in the prisons not having time, but there was an evaluation that was done. And I was reading the evaluation one time, and it was saying that the mother and father were together well and well and alive. And they were talking about the family, and this young man was not even, his parents weren't even together. His father never supported him, was never there for him. His father died for like 5 or 7 years before the evaluation. So when I read this, I was thinking that they were just making all these things up in this young man's evaluation. So my thoughts are, if the evaluations, psychological evaluations, are not getting done properly by these so-called experienced people, providers of the Department of Corrections around the country, what are your thoughts on the Department of Mental Health getting involved and doing some of this themselves inside the prisons? Because there are people trying to advocate to get the or challenge the Department of Mental Health to get more involved in helping these situations with these people, with psychological issues behind those prison walls. It hasn't happened yet. And also the American Psychological Association, which is getting all this money for research, but we already know what the research is all about. We're looking for people to actually go in and help these incarcerated individuals with mental health issues. What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, I would like to show an aspect. Let's use this illustration to the thought that I'm sharing with you. Let's take an individual. Say he's been convicted of a crime. You understand? But before he's convicted, you know what I mean? He never took a mental health evaluation. You know what I mean? He was never, you know what I mean, for whatever reason, you know what I mean? Later on, after he's incarcerated, they come to find out, okay, this person is suffering from mental illness. Okay, but now he's in a system, and he's suffering in silence because no one knew. You understand? Because you could take a person, and you can look at them and think they're up to par, they're okay, nothing's wrong with them because face value. We do it every day in society. Okay, now here we go. Now this individual is walking around and he's suffering inside, and most people, you know, they look, and you know, he may talk good one day and then talk good another day. And then here comes the mental breakdown. Okay, now through research, they go back, and as you say, just in the situation you say, you know, they go and check with mom, dad, sister, brother, however they do, and then they find out, okay, this person has been suffering from mental illness all of his life. And it could, in some cases, it was projected from birth because of whatever happened at birth, and the doctors have said, okay, this person is not going to have a, just say, female somewhat retardation. It happens in life. Whatever the case may be, just use that as an example. Okay, now, as you say, now he's incarcerated. Here we are. What are we dealing with? No one knows. They didn't know. No, we didn't know. But now it is revealed that this person is not up to par. How do we deal with this? They're not trying to go back and fix it. He's here. She's here. Whatever the case may be. So I understand her inside of the Department of Correction. The mental health is a separate entity from Department of Correction. So I notice sometimes they are hindered, and I want to acknowledge that. I don't want to lay blame where it does not fit. And sometimes I just want to assume the best because I'm sort of optimistic in some situations that maybe they try to do their best, because I don't want to categorize the whole from one individual that I may have experienced that I feel probably could have did better, should have did better, but didn't do better. I want to lay that balance into this, because I know people will be listening, are listening, and will be listening, and I want to keep that texture well-rounded, for better choice of words. But to the heart of your question, very important question. That
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Can more research be done? I want to say yes. Is there funds being provided that are not being used? I will hope not, but if the funds are being provided, please use them, because it is a real reality in here. And as it said, that a stitch in time can save nine. So we can start to deal with this issue as we're made aware of it, and we become without excuse, especially when the service is there to service those who are in need of the service. Let's just not take these seats and be in the way. If someone is standing up saying, okay, I'll stand up and do the job, you know, if that makes sense to you. So I think that we should give more attention to that, and in a sense, yes, scrutinize it to make sure that these persons are doing their job and just not taking home a paycheck for doing nothing. When, you know, and sometimes it's just not about furnishing these persons with medication. What I've learned in my experience, my personal experience, that nothing trumps the therapeutic presence of true love, compassion, and friendship. And because that serves a person to say that you're not alone. Although you may be different, you're not alone. There's someone here who will walk with you. There's someone here that will talk with you. There's someone here who will even cry with you, you understand? And understanding that what you're going through cannot be easy. And what you're going through, you should have someone. You should have a shoulder to lean on. And that should be 24/7. Because we can never monitor, in a sense, or project when a person is going to really reach a peak in experiencing their mental health issues. Understand? So maybe if they're going to see mental health and they're doing it once a week or once every 2 weeks, is that really enough to tend to what that person is going through, what these persons are suffering? I think not. I get the difference. I think that is a 24/7 job. Understand? Meaning moment by moment, these persons have to have someone that they can assess. Understand, not to go through a situation and then maybe, okay, that's a point into a single cell, into a suicide cell just to keep them safe, you know, and if it's the weekend and they're not here to do that job, then they just have to go through that. Does that really make a difference, or does that create a distrust? I think the latter. I think it creates a distrust for those who are suffering issues and not having someone to assess in that moment when they really, really need it. I mean, I think that adds, it's like an insult to injury, for better terms or worse. So you're absolutely right. It needs to be, a light needs to be shined. It needs to be brought to the surface. It needs not be neglected. It needs not just be, as they say, smoothed over, because smoothing it over doesn't address it. Smoothing it over does not tend to the needs of those who need such service. So.
Okay, we have a caller. Do you want to state your name, please?
Yes.
I'm
hey,
sorry.
This is Joe, Leona. How you doing? Hello, Reggie.
Good. How are you, Joe? Okay.
So.
Okay, I don't know if you've been listening, but we have Reginald Clemens and his team on talking about the mental illnesses in the prison system, the Department of Corrections around the country. And it's a topic that I think is very important for the audience to listen to, because this is very important in the penal system with mass incarceration, all these mental health institutions closed down, the inappropriateness of the contracted providers with the Department of Corrections around the country, and these bogus, sometimes, psychological reports that are written up. I was speaking about an individual who had an evaluation where they had down that the prison, doing this evaluation, they go right back to the family members, and they were talking about the mother and father being well together and alive, and the father was never in the picture. The father had died 5 years before this even evaluation took place, so they don't really do thorough investigations or evaluations. And this is a problem in the penal system too, is that people are being misdiagnosed. And a lot of military people get diagnosed with the PTSD, but they don't look at the incarcerated individuals not in the military, but who have suffered as children, adolescents, whatever the case may be, have suffered traumas. So we were just listening to this, and again, Larry, please continue with what you were saying.
Yes, and I like the aspect of the PTS aspect of it. Yeah, because a lot of times, person never knows that that's what they're experiencing. You understand? As they go through our life, after they have experienced trauma. You understand? And sometimes the trauma can be the smallest things, you know what I mean, that it ignites a bigger, behavior or psychological irritation. That kind of is cultivated through
you have 1 minute left.
While incarceration, and that stress within itself takes a whole other toll on a person. Because as I say, some of us don't know how to communicate what we're feeling. Some of us are afraid to communicate what we're feeling. Some of us are even detected within ourselves. But who do we turn to say, hey, I think I'm having a mental breakdown? Understand? And that, I think, the environment has to become more friendly to these mental aspects of life, that peers may become more comfortable with expressing it. And even the educational aspect, to give a person an opportunity to be able to identify what they're going through. So with that, and then having counselors that are coming and educate and to provide this information, I think it's one of the situations to where, hey, you catch it in
time. Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
And we'll be calling back in. But these are some of the issues that I'm glad they're talking about tonight, because mental health issues is a major thing in this country. A lot of people in this country are suffering, and they're not getting the treatment even on the outside. What they're being told is, other people are being told when trying to get help for the mentally ill, is that they can't do anything unless the person does something wrong or does something to someone. And once that happens, this is where they end up, mass incarceration. What are your thoughts on that,
well,
Joe?
No, on the other night, I was on a show and I was emphasizing again the same kind of topic that you emphasize in your show. Has anybody that I know come over to your show yet? Because I've recommended it. Probably not.
Reginald Clemens is talking on this show tonight about that. Reginald Clemens and his team. But as far as getting others, even with the Department of Mental Health, I'm really surprised with the providers in the communities of this country. We talk about the United States of America, the U.S. the United States Postal Service. Well, the prisons throughout the country are part of the United States. We talk about the Department of Mental Health and all American Psychological and Psychiatric Association. Well, the prisons are part of the United States American Psychological and Psychiatric Association. So where in the hell are these people? You know, why do they call it the America, or why do they call it the United States when they consider only those outside the penal system, when in fact the people they're treating or lack of treating are behind those prison walls? Well, they're talking about what they do. They don't actually do what they say they're doing. It becomes a hypocritical thing as far as I'm concerned, because we have mass incarceration, 2.3 million people incarcerated. Many of them have psychological issues. And American Psychological Association, Psychiatric Association, Department of Mental Health are out there collecting all this money to treat people probably that are not even as severe as these people behind the walls. And even with the substance abuse counseling, okay, the residential facilities for substances, they have these what do you call it, detox centers. People are in a waiting list to get into a lot of these programs. Instead of putting everybody in prison, use that money to open more substance abuse facilities, mental health facilities. These are very disrupting and disgusting things that I see. And when these men from this prison are talking about compassion, that's what we're lacking in this country, because if we had more compassion for these people, maybe they wouldn't be in prison in the first place. But anyway, I'm going to let them finish the talking on the show. And are you back with us, Reginald or Larry?
Yes.
Okay, please finish what you were saying.
But the aspect that you bring it to the surface is very important. Like some of these persons who have invested their lives to protect this country, and as a consequence of their trauma and PTS, whatever they call it may be, okay, sure, they did it. I get that aspect of it. So we're not here to speak against that. However, they're here, you understand, and they're suffering mental illness. And they should not be written off, because, like I say, a lot of them, they have invested their time and their life into service for their country, and I mean they're veterans, and so it's just not you know, typical people that we're speaking about. We're talking about some persons who hold high stature, even from their military ranks, who are incarcerated in these prisons, and a lot of them are there for God. I'm not gonna say they're for God, because sure they have their own resources. However, can they be dealt with or treated better? I say absolutely, yeah. I mean,
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Should they be? Yes, without a doubt. Did they commit a crime? Yes, okay. But does that take away from what they have offered of themselves when it comes to their country? No, it is not. Not in my eyes. For some, okay, their opinion, I respect that. I'm not here to speak against that. However, the heart of the matter is that there are persons who are suffering inside of these correctional facilities, and they're suffering from mental health issues. And I think that mental health should be given a broader spotlight, and their service should be supported to a higher degree inside of these correctional facilities for those who are here, for those who have been here, and for those who are entering back into society. Should we just send someone back into society who is with the opportunity to be treated and to be serviced, to become better and grab a better edge of their mental health issue? Absolutely, yes. I think they are worthy of that. Now, I'm not going to put the deserving aspect in because some people will oppose that. But the worthy aspect, I say yes. And all predicated on what you spoke of, compassion and understanding. Not every person always get it right. We know that. We don't always get it right. However, what I speak of is the opportunity to make a difference. Will they get it right afterwards? Only time will tell. But to make a difference and to know that we have done our best with a collective effort in addressing this and playing a part in making a difference in it, I think becomes our responsibility. Everything else can be weighed in the balance of those who choose to. But what I see is an opportunity to make a difference. And I think that that opportunity is calling any individual who have something to offer, and whether it be their time, their resources, their insight, their educational level, or even their positioning. I think should step up and be able to and do enough to where they can say, I did my best to make a difference. The opportunity that was at hand. No more blame game, this person, that person, that person. It's all about, okay, what can you do to make a difference? And I think every individual who have something to offer should ask themselves that. You understand? To where now it becomes no longer what this person should do, what that person should do, because, okay, now I'm doing my part. And then that's the attitude that I really want to kind of bring to light. And really speaking of those with the mental health certification to bring to the table. You understand? Like, don't allow that gift to go unused. And those who are in their profession who are aging, I ask, don't take that to the grave with you. Leave it here with us, you know what I mean, so that we may carry a torch and we may make a difference. And for those who cannot enter, in a sense, and don't have the time, if you can make the time to say, okay, well, I will teach you this is how you deal with this, how you go about this, and allow those who are willing to take that torch and to tread that path, to light that path, and to say, okay, now you have, in a sense, delegated. And say, okay, now I'm doing my best. Because sometimes delegation is all a person has left in them to do, to say, okay, I can't do it, but I'm going to pass the torch to you and allow you to do it. And that's the attitude that I really want to kind of focus on overall. So this is where we are, and I know our time is coming short. But, yes, it is real. And, yes, it needs to be dealt with. And, yes, there are resources. Let's use them. And with that, I want to leave with that. And I want to thank everyone who's listening. And I also want to thank you for allowing this opportunity to allow my voice to be shared and to allow this information. And I hope that those who are touched, who are reached, will be able to use that as a motivating factor to say, okay, well, I will. I know I can, and I will. and we would greatly appreciate it. So thank all of you for listening, and I wish everyone well, and let's make a difference.
I want to say, I want to thank you. I want to thank all of you for coming on. I really love when the incarcerated individuals come on the air to talk about these things, because people do not really know anything about any of you. And there's many of you that don't get that opportunity to voice your situations, to talk about your pain, your suffering, the things that you went through prior to being incarcerated. And again, we need people to actually start doing something about it. People, I was at a prison recently, and I was visiting, and there was a couple in there that had a child, and the child was like one, maybe a year old. And the seats, they were sitting directly across from one another. The chairs were two, about maybe a foot apart, 2 feet apart. The individual could not put their feet over a red line. There were little chairs and little tables for kids to play at, but no one offered the little girl, you know, a coloring book or something to sit down. So she was between her mommy and her daddy. She was like, I mean, so not knowing what to do. There was another couple with the baby, and the baby was restless. The baby was crying because the baby didn't have. But these are kind of things, maybe a foot and a half away are the chairs. No table in between. No anything. There was water in there, but they didn't seem to have cups. And one of the things I really abhor is when people talk about mental illnesses, and then they are in the prisons being treated like nothing, being treated like they're not even existing. How do they rehabilitate anybody that's in situations like that? And now I wanted to also mention that when you are working with other incarcerated who have these mental illnesses, you mentioned that learning about their backgrounds. As a social worker, I used to do the genealogy with my clients so that we can have an understanding of what kind of life that they live, what kind of upbringing they had, medical issues, substance abuse issues, mental health issues. These are a lot of things. If psychologists that are doing these evaluations in the prisons are actually doing their job, they're not going to come up with fake information, inaccurate information. If parents are divorced, why would somebody say the parents are together and well and alive? And these are a lot of things they don't talk about either, because a lot of people incarcerated come from backgrounds where there was no father in the home, or where there was domestic violence in the home, or where there was substance abuse, or growing up in the cities where there was drug-infested areas. A lot of these issues where they were traumatized as children, again, adolescents or whatever, they don't bring all these things up. In court, in the parole board, that is a farce, because the parole board does not have to be consisting of the very people that incarcerate. It should be consisting of people in the communities, because that's who they turn to when they come to jury duty. There were so many times I used to get it all the time, notices to appear in court for jury. And I'm wondering, where are all these wealthy people that they can bring them in? But yet when it comes to the parole board, they bring people, they bring people in to be on the parole board that have already made their decisions to judge someone. And that does not need to take place. So there's been talk about parole reform, and I hope that does happen, because that is what is needed. And I hope that people will start challenging their legislative members, their leaders, government leaders, to start insisting that they start having the media go in to meet with these incarcerated individuals, that they start challenging the Department of Mental Health, the American Psychological and Psychiatric Association, to get more involved inside. All of these people that do all this talking, collect all this money and do absolutely nothing. And again, I want to recommend that everybody send some money to these incarcerated individuals that are trying to get the word out, that are doing the good that they're doing. They're rehabilitating people soon to be released, when it should be those who are getting all this money. Talk about defunding. I say defund until we start seeing some incentive to give more money. Better interaction between the incarcerated and the penal system, correctional officers, and prison officials. Until we start seeing programs being opportunities for everybody and not just the few. These are some of the things that we have to look at. And I want to ask you, Larry, if you and Reginald can once again give your information for anyone that wants to donate any kind of funds to you in your group for the work that you're doing. Please repeat what you were talking about before.
As far as the whole aspect of it, it's really about making lives better. That's the bottom line. If we're able to make lives better and sending people back into society better, then ultimately we make the world better, because it is about people not hurting people. People really coming to that point in their development to where they're extending love, they're extending compassion, they're extending nature in the sense of loving one another. That's what we're really about. That's our goal. That's what we're here treading to champion. It's showing up better men, better fathers, better sons, better brothers, better uncles, and more than anything, just more equipped to live this thing and not talk it. I mean, that's what we want to be able to center this whole conversation into. And for anything else, Reentry 2030 is accessible public through certain websites and things of that nature. Going to missouri.com or whatnot, you'll be able to make it to it, and you'll be able to see the plan, the vision, able to get behind it, you know what I mean, if you so choose. So hopefully that will work for you. Again, thank you all for listening. Have a nice day, and may the beauty unfold before you of our attempts and our involvement in being better. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. And again, that website is?
What is it, Missouri? Let me get you exactly. Hey, website we're going to use, which website we're going to use, was exactly Missouri.com, right?
Okay,
it's still under development. I'm sorry.
Okay, so there is no website at all. But how do people?
Missouri. Sorry about that. Missouri Department of Correction. You can go to Missouri Department of Correction.com. And they'll be able to see the reentry 2030 under that.
Okay. So Missouri Department of Corrections.com.
Yes.
Reentry 2030.
Yes, reentry 2030.
Okay. Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on and shedding light. And I really appreciate all that you've spoken about, because these are major issues that need to be discussed. And I hope the audience gets something from it, and I hope they do something with it. That's one way that we can see success in the American prisons, the penal system, is to unite, to work together for positive changes. And hopefully we'll see that happening. Thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you. All right, have a nice day.
You too.
Thanks a lot. All right.
So, audience, that's it.
The caller has hung up.
That is the end of the show, and I thank everyone for listening in. That was Reginald Clemens and his team, Larry, and they are working on Reentry 2030, mentoring others, working with them on mental health issues, mentorship, and other educational and other. Again, please try to support these incarcerated individuals trying to make a difference. We have mass incarceration in the United States, 2.3 million. We have prisoners who are suffering because they're not getting the opportunity to adjust. They're not getting the opportunity to participate in educational and work programs. They're not getting the opportunity to do a lot of positive things. Again, we have people running the penal system, overseers, correctional officers, and prison officials. We have good and bad. We can't look at all of them as being bad, but we can look at the possibility that they may change if they continue to allow their corrupt peers to influence them in any way. So I want everyone to think about that when it comes to either defunding or funding law enforcement or the Department of Corrections around the country. Again, we look forward to everyone joining us. Tomorrow, we will have on with us Andy Williams Jr., who is an individual who is running as an independent candidate under the We the People presidential campaign. He will be with us at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow evening, and that is Eastern Daylight Time. So thank you all for listening in, and we are now going to end this episode.